Welcome back to the Manga Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin, and with me today is Rock. How are you, Rock?
I'm doing good, Kevin.
Good. I'm excited to talk with you because on today's episode, we're going to be changing it up a little bit. Instead of talking about manga chapters and reviewing them and things like that, we're actually going to be talking a whole story arc. And in this case, we're going to be talking about the Jujutsu Kaisen Shibuya incident arc that took place over the course of about 57, 58 chapters. So it's a nice big story arc that we're going to talk about. But before that, I wanted to kind of bring up some news just because there's been some news in the manga world, especially here that the first bit is that that we wanted to talk about is how dominant manga is in just the sales charts. The New York Times just came out with their bestsellers list for this last month, and not surprisingly, Attack on Titan, My Hero Academia, and Demon Slayer were right up there in the top 10, top 15 for bestsellers, which is not surprising, just because My Hero Academia, Spy X Family, Chainsaw Man, Demon Slayer, Jujutsu Kaisen all had volumes also in the top 15 like the previous month. So it's just kind of just you're seeing manga throughout this year, how they're dominating the charts and just getting themselves in there for like New York Times, which is surprising, especially when you consider that for comic books, we haven't had a comic book in there since December 2020, which was the Batman 3 Jokers for people that might know that comic book, and which was at 15 in December 2020. And that was the last time we had a comic book. And for the most part, New York Times graphic novels and manga's bestsellers are dominated by kids' novels. But I kind of wanted to talk about that first because that's interesting for both our worlds that we're into, that manga is a constant in these bestsellers while comic books aren't. What do you think about that, Rock?
Look, this doesn't surprise me at all. You know, I've been reading Western mainstream comics, i.e. Marvel and DC, since, I don't know, I was 6 years old. It's been an eternity now, and I've been following it religiously. I mean, look, we started the comic revolution, Kevin, back in 2006. It's been a long time. We've been watching Marvel and DC closely, and this doesn't surprise me at all. I'm not surprised. I've seen more and more people who used to dismiss manga pretty routinely back in the, I'd say between 2000 and 2015, during that 15-year period, because I started really getting into manga, probably in the mid-90s, but really people dismissed it who were Western comic book readers as just not worth their time, below their you know, just way below their attention. So now to see it switch, and you kind of seen it coming, this isn't like overnight either, I don't think. I think if you look around about 5 years ago, Kevin, I'm thinking around 2015, I think that's when you started to see signs. Western comics have been, you know, look, they've been sliding since 2000. They've been sliding in the sales charts. I mean, they have like momentary hiccups here and there where they might bump up a little bit due to a big event. But for the most part, if you look at the sales trajectory for Marvel and DC, they've kind of been trending downward since 2000. Obviously, nowhere near what they were in the 80s and 90s. But manga, on the other hand, has been trending upward. And I don't know what to tell you. I think that there's people want it. Everybody has a reason why this is happening, right? Everybody has their own personal reason why they think this is happening. And I don't think it's any one. I don't think you can put your finger on exactly one reason. I think it is multiple reasons.
No.
I think what is undisputed is this. Marvel and DC just are not offering what people want right now compared to manga. They're not. And the proof is in the numbers.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I think helps it, because like you said, there's multiple reasons for it. I think one of the things is much more easily accessible more manga is now than it was before, because like before we weren't getting, like you could see like in the Barnes & Noble shelves, because I was actually recently at Barnes & Noble where, it was like one or two shelves of stuff, but now I see like it's a whole wall
of huge manga.
Like, so, and so it's, again, we have so much more of, like, it's not just a more popular Shonen Jump manga or like the manga that's in Japan that that's coming across like to our side here in the United States and around the world. I think just manga being more generally like accessible, I think is a big thing. But I think the other big thing is the power of anime as well. Cause I think we can doubt like manga has always had a strategy, especially like with the short novel series and even mangas and stuff like that, that they're not afraid to do 12 episode series for stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, and they're like, we're doing 12 episodes. If it's popular, cool, maybe we'll continue it. But if it's not popular, it's 12 episodes. And the biggest thing is that anime has always been a promotional piece for everything else, for like the manga, for the merchandise and all that stuff. Yeah. So I think that here in the United States, we're not like that, because everything has to be has to go on for 5 seasons. And there's an attitude, if it doesn't go on for 5 seasons, it's canceled. So
right.
Kind of like what we just saw with what Jupiter's Legacy recently in Netflix, that it was like, it was one season and then Netflix announces that it's canceled and everybody's like freaking out that it's got canceled. But
yeah,
we have that in the anime industry all the time, where it's like everything is one season. Like you rarely, like for the amount of animes we get, it's actually rare to have something go on for more than one season. And people are okay with that. For the most part, like obviously there's those animes that people wish that, oh, I like this anime, it's a fan favorite or whatever, I wish it was more than a one series run. But for the most part, people are like, they know what they're getting into. And I think we're just not wired that way.
Agreed.
Here in the United States, I'm like, oh man, I wish this series would continue. And and it's just, again, it kind of goes back to like The Office and stuff like that, where in the UK, that's how they would do it too. But the United States, we're just not like that. We're not like,
at all.
And we're not willing, like, we're willing to give things a chance that goes, it's one season, why should I watch it?
Right.
Type of thing mentality. So I think that's a big part of it too. Because if, like, think of like how many mangas or comic books would be a little bit more popular if they had like actual animated series going on for them.
Yep.
And they were like 12 episodes, but they're like, this is it. This, we're presenting it so that we could get kids into it. We could get a lot more introduction, because people are watching obviously TV or YouTube or whatever, but or Netflix and things like that. And not everything has to be a franchise.
Yes, agreed. I think a lot of what helps manga, in addition to the anime helping it, is that it doesn't come weighed down with shared continuity.
Yeah,
that has been around for 50 years. In the case of DC, much longer than 50 years, that can be daunting, right? For people, some people are just like, I don't want to have to know all this continuity. This is not appealing to me. Well, manga doesn't have that entry problem, and so that's certain reader. There's a certain group of readers that won't read American comics because of the amount of continuity that is out there, right? Mm-hmm. There are a certain amount of readers that won't read American comics because they're like, it's not the big complaint is, well, Marvel doesn't focus on entertainment. I'm really not interested in social or political statements. I just want to be entertained. There's that group of readers. And there's another group of readers that's like, I don't really like superheroes. Give me something different. So I think those three different groups of readers are all going to go to manga over Marvel and DC.
Yeah. And I think it's also interesting because you are totally right about that how easily accessible, and like, it's easy to get into new series.
Yep.
Because of that, just because it's like, this is a fresh new universe, because we're seeing that with like the recent sales charts. Because even though like, One Piece, Dragon Ball, and Naruto are dominating, like in terms of what the most popular series of all time for Shonen is, like recently, but we have new series in there, like relatively, of like Demon Slayer is like at 150 million total sales worldwide for Shonen. And even though that series ended, it's still a relatively new franchise to sell like 150 million. That's incredibly impressive, because that cracks it into the top 10.
Right.
So you could see that like steadily more and more people are just discovering across the world that all these manga, that like us getting it as quickly as we do now, even though it's still not as quick as like Japan, obviously, but now that they're just bringing it over, I think we're seeing that the manga industry kind of understands we need to get more out there to the world, because it's not just the United States, but I see it in South America with my cousins and things like that, I have cousins in South America and like El Salvador and stuff that are just reading manga now. I was just like, that's cool. And that's super cool that you guys have it super, it's more accessible for you guys. And it's not just Dragon Ball anymore. It's not that. I think that for a long time that's what it was. Mm-hmm. So, so it's really great to see that. So, but yeah, so on top of that, like just a little bit more celebration for the manga industry, we had the Eisner Awards also get announced this past week. And so they just announced as part of the best US editions of international material for Asia, they several manga series were in there. So we had that same dream again by Yoru Somino and Idumi Kihara, and it was from Seven Seas Publishing. I wish, and another series was I Wish I Could Say Thank You by Yukari Takinami, and it's by from Fanfare. Then another series called Journal of My Father by Jiro Taniguchi from Fanfare as well publishing. And then we had Ping Pong, which is a Viz Media published, and that series is by Tayo Matsumoto. And then also another Viz Media published series called Rimina by Juji Ito. And then one of our favorites is Spy X Family. The first three volumes was obviously by Tatsuya Endo, is also another Viz Media. So that those are the big publish. Obviously, we probably have our favorite pick for what we want to win. But what do you think of this list of for Eisner Award win?
I think it's an interesting list. Obviously, I think we all know my bias is for Spy X Family. Clearly, that's what I think should win. But you have it again. This speaks to the strength of manga. You have a wide cross section of genres with those various nominees. And again, I think that speaks to the strength of what manga brings to the table. My own complaint, Kevin, is I think we're going to get at the point where manga needs to not just be relegated to the international material.
Yeah.
Segment, just be eligible for any segment of the Eisners. I think we got to stop, you know, the protectionist, kind of like how we do with the Academy Awards. We need to stop the protectionist approach, open it up to everybody, because I don't think that's quite fair.
Yeah. And I think that just kind of further adds to, cause you're right. We totally see that with the Academy Awards as well. And like Oscars and all that stuff of how they always have like the best Oscars for best picture, but then that's best picture United States usually.
That's right.
And then they have a best picture for foreign stuff. So yeah, you're totally right that I think opening it up for more than just the comic book industry, like saying, hey, what's the best series? What's the best series of, and just include manga. Cause especially with how popular it is and how we saw with the, like I said, with the New York Times bestseller list, it's like manga's here to stay, guys. And it's like, if the more you included, like the included all being all inclusive and then not just relegated to just one section, that I think that would be a big step for the Eisner Awards.
I think it would also probably drive more interest in the Eisner Awards too.
Yeah, for sure. And then we do see it a little bit with the other categories as well, that in the best graphic novel category for best graphic memoir category, like the I don't know how to give birth by Ayama Kazame was nominated in that category. Juji Ito was also nominated for best writer and artist category.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming.
And Ping Pong was nominated in best letterer category. And then Stan Sakuji's Usagi Yojimbo, which we know is like an iconic series, is nominated for best continuing series and best lettering as well. So we're starting to see a little bit more. And you could see that just like including these people in other categories, maybe not the best series category, but just including like these creators in like categories with along with like Chips and Zdarsky, who's writing Daredevil and things like that, I think is a step forward, least for these Eisner Awards, because like you said, they are still like they are seeing like the Oscars for here and for the comic book industry, I would say. But I think just like the Oscars, they're running into the problem of like, how do we include these international series? Do we give them their own category, or do we? But they obviously want to include it because they made a whole category for just this, so
Right. It's manga's too popular, and it's just not going anywhere. So if you're looking with an eye toward the future, it's got to be in the mix.
Yeah, for sure. And again, it'll be interesting to see which series, just because like the big thing that I do like about this series, that it does have its own category. The only reason that I kind of like it has its own category is the death of the industry too, because like kind of what we we get into for the most part is the shonen stuff, and with some of the comedy series. But then there's like this, like there's the slice of life manga that are incredibly popular. There's also the fantasy and other, so many different categories for what, because there's a lot of here in this list that I don't recognize. Because it's a nominator, I'm like, okay, I want to actually read it. And I think that's a cool thing about these, the Eisner Awards, is whenever you see series that, oh, I don't recognize, but it's nominated, so it must be a pretty good series. And like, I need to go check these out. And so like, I want to try and go check out all these manga that I have not read, because like outside of Spy X Family, I'm not familiar with anything else on this list. So
yeah, I'm only familiar tangentially with Remina in Ping Pong. I can't tell you that I'm, you know, knee deep in them.
Yeah,
I know about them, but that's it. But the other three, yeah, they're new to me. So it just drives more interest into something that maybe I wouldn't normally have checked out.
Yeah, and it's kind of like the best picture list too. Like when you see Oscar, you're like, oh, what is that movie? Like I do not know what that movie is, because I only watched Avengers or something.
That's right.
So I think that's the cool thing about these awards anyways. But yeah, so I just like just briefly talking about that. Again, congratulations to everybody that's been nominated. Again, hopefully, like for me, Spy X Family should win best series, but
yes. Agreed.
But yeah, all right. So just moving on from there, we'll be talking about our topic of the show, which is the Jujutsu Kaisen Shibuya incident arc. But before we get into the story arc itself, for anybody that does not know, Jujutsu Kaisen is a manga series that started coming out in 2018. And it's just basically about a world where there's these cursed spirits that feed on unsuspecting humans and fragments of legendary and feared demon named Ryume and they've been scattered throughout the world, and because Ryume Sukuna is like this ancient spirit, he's not around anymore, but should any curse consume Sukuna's body part, the power they gain could destroy the world. So Sukuna is specifically a very powerful entity in this universe, and unsuspecting to anybody else. Our main character, his name is Yuji Itori, has an incident at his school that ends up eating one of the cursed fingers of this character. So he becomes this person that gains these spirit powers through basically just consuming one of the fingers, which is as disgusting as you think it is.
So. It totally is.
And like I said, just like most manga series, we have a trio of main characters here. So we have the Yuji Itadori, that's our main spiky hair character that we always see in these type of series. And so he's obviously like the main character that for the most part is focused on, but he also has his friends, Megumi Fushiguro, who's a incredibly talented curse user, who specializes in using spirits for combat. And he's obviously Yuji's rival and best friend in the series, and he's incredibly talented. And then we also have the Nobara Kugisaki, she's the other main character who joins the school that Yuji and Megumi attend. She uses, for the most part, she's like a weapons specialist with her specialty using like a hammer and nails infused with curse powers to exercise curses. And then those are the main trio that we follow for the most part, especially at the beginning of the series that are doing the training, because they're first years at the technical school that for Jujutsu sorcerers that we follow. But along with them, we have a core cast members of older characters, like one of their senpais at the school is named Maki Zenin, and she's not as powerful as a cursed energy user as everybody else, but she's a super badass weapons user. So she's has incredible skill in terms of using weapons to make up for her lack of like energy level for the most part. So she is not someone to be messed with at all, as you'll find out from this series. And then there's another character, Toge Inumaki, who also has cursed powers, is another senpai for the series. And Then there's also this character that looks like a panda, but is actually another, is a cursed corpse spirit that was created by my dogs are just barking. I'm not sure if you could hear that, but the panda, who's this, like, as you could think about, is a giant panda that basically was a cursed corpse, and he's been allowed to, like, mature and grow, and he has his own sentience, and he's able to talk and everything. So it's as silly as you could think. It's as silly as you could think about it. He's one of the best characters. and then the final character is Yuji Megumi and Nobara's teacher at the Tokyo Prefecture of Jujutsu High School is Satoru Jojo. And yeah, like I said, he's the teacher. He's kind of the expert in this world. So those are the core cast members. And again, these characters are just kind of dealing with getting trained for, like, the series starts with them, with our Yuji, Megumi, and Nobara training for the most part, and trying to get to everybody's level so that way they could help with exercising spirits, or cursed spirits in this case, and things like that. So, and from there we have the biggest arc of this entire series, that, like, the first 78 chapters of the series has been building towards, which is called this Shibuya Incident. So we have this Shibuya Incident that takes place over the course of about 57 chapters. Four chapters are prelude chapters, like, kind of teasing what's going to be about. And then we get into goes from chapter 79 through chapter 82 of the series. And then the story arc itself officially begins on chapter 83, and it goes all the way to 136. So again, it's a really long story arc that takes place over about 58 if you count some, like, interstitial chapters, because they have a couple of chapters where it's like interludes, but for the core story it's about 57 chapters. And it's, again, the series is done by Geijo Okutami. So yeah, and he does the entire artwork and writing for this entire series. So obviously he had a lot on his hand with this 50 plus chapter story arc. So before we get into spoilers, I wanted to get your overall thoughts, Rock, of what did you think of this massive story arc?
Well, first of all, what I love about it is it's like almost a 50 plus chapter story arc, but it only takes place during one day. Fantastic. I love that. I like any manga that has massive story arcs, but the actual amount of time that elapses is super, super short.
Yeah.
I don't know why I like that. I've always loved that. It stems back from my love. Yeah, I'm going to mention it, Kinnikuman, where you would get like 40 chapters and it was like a fight, you know, that lasted 9 minutes. Well, so stupid.
And one of the cool things about this story arc is that, and like I really actually enjoyed, was that we would get certain chapters in this where they would be tell us, oh, this is how much time has passed.
Yes.
Just like, this is 10:18, and then it's like 10:38 or something like that. Yeah. So we would constantly be reminded, and I think that added so much to the urgency of the story, because not too much time has passed, but it's actually like it adds to excitement. I thought, like, not to spoiler too much, but that is like one of the running things that we see, like, in a couple, every few chapters we'll be reminded of how much time has passed.
Yes. And that's what I like a lot about this story arc, is how well it's constructed in terms of the actual structure of the story and the plotting and the pacing. It's top notch. I think it's wise, you know, when you're doing a story arc that is 50 plus chapters, but only takes place during one day, you need to have it intelligently spaced out and organized. And I think by using the hours, the time of day, I thought that was brilliant, because it lets you know, because you might go, you know, five chapters in one scene and you're thinking, gosh, this is taking a long time. And then you see, okay, boom, it's only been 5 minutes. So even though it's, you know, with a 50 plus chapter story arc, it's hard to keep that sense of urgency, like you're saying. But using the timestamps helps to create that sense of urgency, even in a very, very long story arc. That's hard to do. And that was a smart way to keep that sense of urgency going through such a long decompressed. Decompressed is a negative word in American comics, but it is decompressed in that it's 50 plus chapters over
yeah.
a tiny period of time.
Yeah. And also it keeps you aware of like, oh, this is going to like, it keeps you reminding that this is an event that's going to take place over just one day. So as soon as midnight hits, this story is over. Ooh. And you're like,
yes.
What is the big thing that at midnight, what is going to happen? Cause it have this event takes place on, for the story is on October 31st. So you're just constantly aware of, oh man, we're getting closer to midnight. What is going to happen? Like, cause we're already having so many big, big things like this, this entire story arc is just one big action, like
yes,
just like we have a couple moments where like you're allowed to breathe in certain chapters like after a big action sequence, but for the most part this is like almost entirely just from one fight to another fight to the next fight to the next fight, and like the fights will last anywhere from one chapter to about 4 or 5 chapters, I would say, like is the longest, like the final fight, which is with the big bad of the pseudo ghetto, which we'll get into a little bit and here in a little bit, but that big final boss fight is like it all leads up to how big that final fight. And I think that this series does a very good job, especially with this story arc of having each fight that we get ramp up, like everything gets a little bit more brutal. And I think we talked about this in like with Chojin X of gore and brutality a little bit, of like how sometimes we're not big fans of it, but I think this series does a really good job of like of delivering gore but not making you feel like you're wincing at the gore. So it's not getting into the whole, it's not a horror series, even though there's a lot of like monsters and gorish action that's going on, because like the fighting is very brutal in this series, but it never feels like you're reading a horror series. You're always into like, this is an action series. These people are just like not holding back. You're always feeling like the characters here are just not holding back. And that's why the fights come across as so brutal.
Correct. No, I agree. And I think that's smart to point out, because you see just enough gore to let you know the brutality, but Akutami always cuts away. He gives you a hint of it and then he cuts away. So your imagination takes over and you never actually see it. I mean, you never see it close up.
Yeah.
Which I think is smart. And he keeps the focus on the action. You know what I guess overall, what really amazes me is that how Akutami is able to, he is able to juggle a huge roster of characters. I mean, I'm talking huge. This is Paul Levitt's Legion of Superheroes. Huge.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, seriously, I mean, Levitt's with the Legion is the first thing I thought of with how Akutami is able to handle this many characters in a massive story arc. It's very similar. That is really hard to do. And I feel like we need to shine a spotlight on that, because a lot of writers will shy away from that. It is very difficult.
Yeah, and I think the most important part, because this is like, I feel like it's so unique to this series, because you're totally right about pointing out the cast of this series, that it all, even though we have Yuji Itadori, who is definitely the main spiky hair character that we have in most manga series, for the most part, Jujutsu Kaisen does such a good job of making every character feel like a main character. Like every fight has like a sense of importance. It's not just of like, oh, we're waiting until our main character fights the main bad guy. It's not about, it never feels like that. It always feels like you're in the moment and you're in the action that you're actually in. And I think that's the only critique I have with a lot of other manga series, is that usually, like, you know, when there's like these fights that are feel like filler, or like we're waiting for like, oh, the next big fight, the main character, the cover character of the series will be getting into. But for the most part, I never felt like that in this story arc. I was just like so into every single fight that they had from like beginning to end. Like we had the first fight that with Satoru Jojo, which we'll get into of like when we get into spoilers. But just like his fight, it felt so important, and we did not have the main character in there at all. Like it was just this great fight that took place over about 4 or 5 chapters spread out. And that felt like the most important fight that this series has ever had. And Again, yeah. They didn't involve the main character. It just involved this, like his teacher, and that just speaks to how well like this entire world has been crafted along with the characters, because you're like you get into it of believing this is every character's a main. It feels like a main character.
Completely agree. I think that is what makes Jujutsu Kaisen so unique and so special, is that it is able to have multiple characters serve as the quote unquote main character, even if they're not. Again, it reminds me of Levitz's Legion of Superheroes in that there were always the few that were the main ones, right?
Yeah.
But even when he focused on one of the minor ones, Shrinking Violet, whoever, you know, he made them seem like the star and a big deal. And in their moment, they got to showcase why they're awesome, why they're on the team, right?
Yeah.
And that's what we get. That's what we get with this manga. Akutami makes sure that, hey, when this character A, B, C, or D is in a fight, I'm going to showcase them, yeah, why they're special, why they're good, and make them look like the main character and the hero of the moment. That is brilliant, and you don't see it a lot in a lot of titles, but that's what makes Jujutsu Kaisen so excellent. You get that. And, you know, as a result of that, Kevin, as a result of that, there are two things I noticed during the story arc. One, I found all the fights equally compelling because, like you said, it's not like how some other manga make you realize this fight doesn't really matter. It's just taking up time until the main character shows up.
Yeah.
So all the fights mattered. I was invested in every single fight. I really was. And two, Kevin, the main character, Yuji, I don't even know if he cracks my top 10. Favorite characters in this,
right?
Seriously, I don't think he is in my top 10. He really, and it's not to say he's a bad character. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying there's so many other great characters that the main character of this title doesn't make my top 10. And we'll get into it in the spoilers. He doesn't even make my top 10 favorite characters.
Yeah, and I think that just kind of speaks to the power of this entire series, because there's so many great characters here. And I think one thing that he did, Akitomi does such a good job in throughout the action, because this is a super action heavy story arc, but he delivers so much character work throughout the action that like, and he knows like he has such good timing of like, this is when I want to have the character do like a little monologue or like we're going to do a flashback here and there to spread things out, and just like, yes, get me more invested in these characters. He's creating more investment so that when we get like, we're back into the fight, like the fight continues, you're like, you're even more invested. I think the series has such good timing of like that character work.
I'm so glad you mentioned the flashbacks, Kevin, because you're spot on. The use of flashbacks is superlative, because what we'll get is we'll get a fight, something will trigger a flashback in a character, we'll get the flashback, and that flashback scene will flesh that character out for the reader, give the character more depth, more nuance, get the reader more interested in that character, and then whoop, we'll go back to the fight, and now, oh my God, you're even more invested than you were before, and you pulled off some cool character work all at the same time. It's really well done, those flashbacks. I like that technique.
Yeah, so, but is there anything else before we get into spoilers? Because I think we've kind of talked it up. I think we both really enjoyed the story arc in general, for anybody that wants to avoid spoilers. Because again, just for anybody to know, I think Jujutsu Kaisen ended episode 23, was about around the 50s chapters for where this series is at right now. So I can just look that up real quick so that people know. So this is a story arc that will take place after the events of the current anime is at, which was at, give me one second. So they were like, the anime adapted about 64 chapters of the manga series. So this does take place, and this will probably be what the bulk of the second season when the Jujutsu Kaisen comes back. And so again, like, fans of the, like, if you're just watching the anime, you have a lot to look forward to this story arc there's going. I cannot wait for the anime to like adapt this and see how crazy the action is, because I think one thing that just non-spoilery stuff that I think the anime does a better job with is the art direction, because I think here Akutami is the one that's mainly the one that's doing all the artwork, and you could really tell that he's handling almost all the artwork. And I think the action looks great in this series, but I think it's in the moments where it's just drawing the characters, or like he has too many characters, you could tell when it's very sketchy. Like he just like, I have to finish this and I've got to meet a deadline. So there's a lot of times in the artwork where, again, it's not his fault, but you could tell that maybe he needs a couple more assistants to work with him.
I think you're totally right. And that was my last non-spoiler thing to talk about, yeah, was his art. And you said it perfectly. Akutami is doing it all himself. It's pretty evident he is. And because of that, you can see where sometimes you will go panels and panels and panels with no backgrounds.
Yeah.
You will also get panels where the focal point character is drawn with some detail, and then the rest of the characters are all rough sketches, right?
Yeah.
And you can tell he's kind of saving up for the big climactic moment of the fight where he really pours in the details. So you can tell this is kind of a one-man show, or gosh, very close to it.
Yeah.
And my only non-spoiler criticism is the art can be uneven at times.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's my main one. And I could kind of like, just looking at how big the story arc was, I could completely understand why he needs to take a break. Cause for those that don't know, Akutami is going to be taking a break here after this next chapter, I believe. And he'll be taking at least a month break just for health reasons. And again, all the best wishes to him, but yeah, I really hope that the break does give him time to just rest up, because obviously like he did, like the artwork when it was at its best, it was really, really good, because the action looked incredible, especially what he poured into the action, because was really great. Like all this, I think the splash pages of this entire story, because we get a ton of them. We get a ton of splash pages in all the action sequence. He does a really great job. And I think that like maybe once he gets back from his break, I hope maybe he gets another assistant or so, or like a couple of assistants to help him out with it. Cause again, I think it just will help the artwork, especially because the series is so strong in terms of storytelling that the artwork can just help. Cause we know that like a lot of mangakas, even though they handle the bulk of the art, like they have assistants. And I think having a couple of assistants like is evident that maybe he needs. And so that way he doesn't have to burn himself out like he is, because that's always a dangerous thing. And we hope, like, I hope I speak for you as well, that he has a nice long break and goes on vacation, things like that, and is able to come back stronger than ever. So
totally agree.
Yeah. And now again, that's our non-spoilery thoughts. If you, like I said, if you're only watching the anime and don't want to get into like learn all the events of this story, the Shibuya incident arc, that's going to probably be adapted for the second season. Again, you could stop here. But all right, so from there, let's just get into full spoilers. And I think the first place I want to start with is the prelude fight that we have that kind of sets up the Shibuya incident, because even though it's technically not part of the story arc, I think it's very important to talk about it because it sets everything up for what's going to happen on October 31st, which is the fight between Kokichi Muta and Mahito. That fight is, I think, it is a good tone setter for this entire story arc, because it's like, one, the action is incredibly super detailed, and like it just goes all out, like where you're kind of, it's almost like an introduction of what we're going to see in this entire story, like with the powers that are used and just like the level of action that we get. Mm-hmm. That you kind of, it's such a big action sequence that you're like, oh, this is the scale that we're going to get to at the end. And it almost teases us that. So I think it does a really good job of this. And it sets up Mahito as well as like the main bad guy for this entire story arc that our main characters are going to fight. So it's good that we get to see the main character, the main bad guy for this entire story arc.
Agreed.
Like, see why he's a badass and why he's actually the one in charge, instead of like constantly teasing in the background where he's letting his minions do the work. I think that it's a very important thing and a smart thing that this story does to set the tone for it.
I agree. I think the use of Mechamaru as the hero for Mahito to battle was smart. And the reason for that is Mechamaru is physically impressive and imposing. So by giving Mahito a character to fight that may not be of the high rank of some of the other characters, but at least presents in an impressive fashion physically and in size, that's smart in order to get over with the reader how powerful Mahito is. That's, I thought, was a wise choice of heroes to use for Mahito, because really, this is, like all good fight psychology, this is Akutami building up the big bad heel, right? Building him up before the story arc officially kicks off. And this is the best way to build him up, by having him get a win over such a physically imposing hero.
Yeah, and I think it also is important because, like, Mahito is not like a new character that we're just getting introduced to. Right. He's like been part of the series from about the beginning. So mm-hmm. I think it's important to set the standard of why he is going to be the big bad guy of this. Because since we've gotten so used to seeing him around this series so much that it's kind of like almost any bad guy, you almost sometimes forget how badass of a fighter he is. And
correct.
Then, so just having this fight to, like, before the October 31st incident that kicks off the Shibuya incident, I think is an important thing to just kind of set your mind of, like, oh, he is going to be someone that not to mess with at all.
Got it. And I like Mahito as the focus for the big bad, because unlike other villains, you don't like Mahito.
Yeah.
He's not like one of those villains that's, you know, a cool villain that, you know, you secretly like or not so secretly like. And he's not the kind of villain that you love to hate. He's the villain that you just don't like. Like, mm-hmm. I just don't like him. I don't love to hate him. I just hate him.
Yeah. And just
a good villain. That's a good villain, though.
And just kind of also getting into it of, like, him being the pseudo ghetto as well. Like, just kind of setting all that up of, like, it also, like, in just kind of leads into that next fight where we have the Satsuro Goju, like, that start really kicks off this whole entire Shibuya incident, because they're trying to seal him, because Satsuro Goju, who's, like, again, the teacher for at the school that Yuji's at, and his mentor, like, they have a very close connection. Like, this entire series builds up this close connection between Satsuro Goju and Yuji for the entire, like, I would say up to the story arc, that was like one of the biggest bonds, like even more so than Yuji's bond with Megumi or Nabora. I think this is his, like, his closest bond that he has in this entire series. So kind of setting it up for Satsuro Goju not to just take on Mahito next, but he has to take on three other characters in the form of characters named Goju, Hanami, and Choso. Is you're like, that also just goes into, we already just saw Mahito, how badass he is, but even this guy that who's incredible badass and who is pseudo ghetto, who's like the main bad guy of the entire series, he has to get three other people to help him out to take on this one guy. And you're like, really? How were you able to fight this one, like these two people by yourself? And you looked like you could hold your own against anybody. And then once you get to the teacher of the school, you have to get three other dudes to come back, help you out with this fight. But again, it just sets up the scale of this, of like how much incredible badass that Satsuro Goju is, and that he lives up to all the talk that he's had in this entire series.
I agree. I kind of view, I view Satoru as the Superman of the series, right? He's the big guy. He's number one. He's the by far and away the alpha hero. He's the most powerful guy. He's the one everyone's looking to save the day. And I think this fight firmly establishes to the reader that Satoru is the Superman of the series. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important, because you kind of have to have that one hero that everyone can believe in, that one hero who has the raw power to stop anyone and to save the world. Now, we'll see what happens in the future, but you got to have that. I think having that kind of hero is important, because they serve as an inspiration to others, and we'll see how Satoru serves as an inspiration to his students. But I like that we get the, I mean, make no mistake about it, Akutami says Goju, Satoru Goju is the man, mm-hmm. period, end of story. No one can beat this guy. Just forget about it.
Yeah, and I like that it's not just a straight up fight too, because they're like, we have to try and get one up on him beforehand, but like they have like these thousand spirits and all this stuff, and it's like, Gojo sees this and he's like, oh, okay. I wasn't expecting this, but then he just takes, like, just hands everybody their ass, like, the entire time. It's like, you're like, holy crap, this guy is, like, everything that he's been slitting Yuji and the others is like, yeah, he holds up. He is, like you said, he is the kind of the Superman of this series. And it's just like the way he just, like, and again, this is where the artwork by Akutami just shines, because, like, even though there's a lot on the screen, you could tell he's poured a lot of detail in this, because, like, he wanted to make sure Satoru just looked like the biggest badass in this entire series has ever seen. So I think it also speaks to just kind of like the character doesn't just feel like one note, even though he's like a Superman type character. Yes. Like, there's so much personality in everything that he does. Like, even up to the point where he gets actually, like, because again, this entire fight that kicks off this story arc, he ends up getting sealed for by Mahito and the two of the other people. He gets sealed off, but even in his defeat, he's like, kind of, can you just get it over with? All right, you guys got me. Like, he actually just yells at the bad guy. He's like, all right, you got me. All right, just get it over. I don't want to hear your evil speech or whatever. And I just like that you see that personality come out of him. He's like, all right, this happened to me, whatever, but can you just get it over with so I don't have to hear you talk anymore? And I just like that little thing that he adds to this, because it's like it shows more of the personality that Satoru has. It's not like just like, he's not yelling up that saying, oh my God, why did this happen to me? Or like, how could this happen to me? He's like, all right, you guys did it. Whatever. Natural. Yeah. I really like that part.
I agree. And I think what Akutami also achieves is he gets Pseudo Ghetto over as the true, while Mahito may be the physical big bad that our hero must conquer, right? That may be the physical big bad that we must conquer at the end of the story. Akutami gets Pseudo Ghetto over as the evil mastermind who doesn't have to be physical.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? His evilness is his brain. It's his mind. It's his spirit. And I like that Akamati doesn't really have to has everyone else act as Pseudo Ghetto's muscle.
Yeah.
I dig that, because we're placing Pseudo Ghetto on much higher up, and it's kind of signaling to the reader that, hey, at the end of this story arc, don't expect Pseudo Ghetto to be completely dealt with.
Yeah.
And that's good signaling to the reader. And also, I have to say, I hate Mahito because he's just a horrible villain. Yeah. I do like Jogo. Mm-hmm. I love him because he entertains me. He's funny. And he has the coolest character design, I think. An awesome character design. And Chozo, this scene is what started to get me hooked on Chozo's character, and I just fell more and more in love with Chozo's character as we progressed forward in this story arc.
And I think it's also like just having those, like you said, Chozo and Hanami and Gojo and Mahito, like all four of them take part of this fight against one character. I think it also sets those four characters, like the specifically because Hanami is exercised by Satoru, so it leaves like Gojo, Chozo, and Mahito of just like these three are characters that like our main characters are of like the students, and everybody are going to have to fight eventually, and it just kind of sets them up as well, because we already had Mahito set up as like this incredible badass powerful character that will probably could defeat anybody else except for Satoru. By himself. But then you have Jojo and Chozo of like these other characters that they're going to have to deal with before they get to Mahito as the big bad. And I think it was a good just setting things up for those characters of when they're going to fight Yuji and Nobara or Megumi. Like it's good that we have this kind of setting the scales for what it's going to be about, like the rest. Because again, we get into this huge fight, and then after that, we get everybody else. Like, now it's time to rein it back of like, hey, let's get Yuji into it, because obviously he's our main character, and we got the others of the series. And just like we get a couple fights because, again, Choso, Mahito, and Jojo go away for a little bit. And it's now just like this incident that just has so many cursed spirits all around. And going back to what we said in our non-spoiler talk of like, you're always aware of the time, like after every fight. And I think that that's a cool thing because we have so many different fights go on. Like for the most part, they're like one or two chapters for the for a couple of them are up to four chapters. But like at the end of every chapter, you're set up like, oh, this is how much time has passed. It's only been like 5-10 minutes, but it's incredible. Like just ramp up, like every fight feels like it's building on top of each other.
Absolutely agree. And this fight really sets the stage for everything heading all the way to the conclusion. It's nice signaling to the reader. Yeah. That's good long range vision.
Yeah, because we have what Yuji versus like some of these grasshopper cursed spirits like that, which is just insane. Like I really like that. I we're just getting these crazy things of like, oh yeah, the spirits are not just humans. There's going to be like these huge giant monster grasshoppers. But again, it's taken care of very quickly. But it's just again setting up how crazy things are going to get because cursed spirits could be anything from a grasshopper to this demonic creature, and our main characters are just going to have to deal with it. And it's the same thing with like when Takuma, you know, takes on Ugami and her grandsons. It's like, you don't know what you're going to expect. Like all these fights, like that we get before we get back to like the main bad guys of this. It's like, I think it does really well. And for just setting up these characters again, just after we saw Satoru, how badass he is.
Agreed. Look, these are smaller fights. These are side fights, right? That are just little barriers for our heroes to conquer on their way up the ladder to the big bad. But you need these the smaller henchmen that can be knocked down as our heroes are climbing that ladder. Hey, come on, the grasshopper, Steven, how dare you not mention that he's smart,
right?
He's smart, okay? if a curse can talk, it implies some level of intelligence that most curses don't have. And so this grasshopper keeps saying, I'm smart. He's not smart. That's the best thing. He can talk, which makes him smart for a curse, but he's really stupid. But he's a great, but it's a cool design. And it lets you know, oh, wow, we're going to see all sorts of cool stuff with these curses.
Yeah.
And I like that. And then, like you said, the Takumi Ino versus Ogami and her grandson, that was a great fight as well. Because it ends with the big swerve of Toji Zenin coming back, who is one of my favorite characters. Yeah. I love me Toji Zenin. That was just like, what? Where'd that come from?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, just kind of goes sets up like each of these fights, even though they're not like super long that until we get to the big bad. Because I think for the most part, like I said, it's four chapters for like almost even the biggest fight is that for the most part. But there's always like an important aspect to it, like either at the end or in the middle, that you learn about like either the characters or there's a big character reveal. And I think all these fights just build on top of each other nicely like that, so that the way the story, once we get to the end, it feels like such a big event. But at the same time, it kind of just pays off what we're seeing with these characters of like what we've had in the previous 75-78 chapters building up of like with Yuji and Megumi like teaming up against Awakasaka. Like that was incredibly cool because we don't really see them team up very often in this series together because they fight mostly individual fights. But and so it's like very cool to see like these characters that we've been following for a while, and like we know that Yuji and Megumi are the typical best friends of a manga series, and like just seeing them fight together and how efficient they are and like how they're able to combine each other's powers, like I thought that was like incredibly cool just to see those characters like fight together against this really like tough opponent, and just kind of shows, even though the tough opponent, he's like a stocky old man looking guy.
I love that character's look. It's great, isn't it? It's awesome.
He's like what Wolverine should look like.
Yes.
He's like an angry little guy, but it's like he's like super built, and so it's like this incredible, like again, just goes back to the character designs, and when the artwork is at its best, it's like what these character designs that are so over the top that they're just so cool.
He kind of has a little bit of that like Japanese genie demon kind of look to him.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great character design, and he's a cool character. He kind of reminds me of like, if you took a Wolverine and Puck and combined the two of them.
Yeah.
It's a cool character. Again, this is Akutami being able to take these small minor characters. Let's be honest. Awasaka, he's a very minor character, right?
Yeah.
But in this fight, Akutami really focuses on Awasaka, gives us a flashback right during the fight to give us more information on Awasaka, gets you more interested in his character, gets you more invested, gets him over with the reader. For this fight, Awasaka gets to look like a big deal, a main character. And it's this ability that Akutami has to make everyone, no matter how small of a character they are in the story arc, to make everyone seem like they're important.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, and that goes also to the next fight that we have it with Mei Mei and Neji Ibina, where like Mei Mei like is able to take this character out, like this Neji very quickly. But in that, like, there's some character work done with Mei Mei of like she even says, "Oh hey, I hope that Satsuro will owe me big for what's gonna like for me saving his ass like later on." And it's just like again like little character stuff like that. Even when we have like short fights, they have something involved with them, so it's not just like, oh, I need some action here. It's actually purpose for to build these characters out, so it's not just like one or two main characters. It is every single character you're going to see on screen is going to be a main character in this Shibuya incident, which again just escalates it, where it's like the Shibuya incident just feels like such a big event for this series going forward. And it's like you could tell, like, as we're building more and more, we're getting into chapter 4, like part 14, part 15, part 16 of this. Like, you're like, man, how long is this story going to go? Because it's like there's so much going on and there's so many characters involved, because it feels like everybody that we've ever met in the series is involved in this story.
Yep. I love the Mei Mei is awesome. The second she shows up, I'm like, oh, I'm going to like this character.
Right.
Come on. Full disclosure. This is the kind of character that Rock's going to like. Good looking women, long hair, and giant oversized weapons. Sign me up, Kevin. I'm hooked.
So. Yeah, and it just kind of goes to back to like just going, like showing us the scale of like the different types of cursed users. Like, cause it's not just about like the abilities that we normally see. It's like, we could have these characters with huge weapons as well that are going to be incredibly badass. And you're just, didn't get so invested in them right away. I think just creating investment right away for them.
And it's a small fight with Neji Ibina, but it gets Mei Mei over with the reader. That's the whole point of it is, wow, okay, got it. I get why she's a big deal. Okay, I also get a feel of her personality. She's a little mercenary. She's a good guy, but he's pretty mercenary.
Yeah, and you want to know more about like what her relationship is with Satsuro and all that stuff. Yes. So it's like a little tease of that, of like for the future. I think it's all good, just because again, you don't need every fight to last like 4 or 5 chapters. You could have one, two chapter fights of like, all right, and this is the purpose of just getting over the character. That's totally fine.
You got it. Exactly.
So, but yeah, and then we get into a bunch of other fights. Like in terms of like, I would say, up to, let's say, the Sukuna, like the big Sukuna reveal at the end, because everything like up to like Yuji transforming into Sukuna, it is kind of like still like kind of minor fights. What was your favorite fight up to, I would say, let's say the Sukuna versus Gojo?
Let's see. I would probably say I loved Mei Mei and her brother Yuyu versus the smallpox deity.
Yeah.
I love them. The brother sister team is fantastic. I like both. I love the relationship between the two. Obviously, it is implied that the love between this brother and sister is not quite normal brother sister love. Yes, Kevin.
Right? Yeah. So something. There's something going on.
A little something there, right? Little closer than I have a sister, Kevin. Okay, an older one, and not like that.
yeah exactly. Yeah, same. So it's very weird, but yeah.
And I adored the Yuji versus Chozo fight. Again, Chozo, this story arc, Kevin, made Chozo just whoop, fly my rank of top 10 characters. He's in my top 5 now. He might be in my top 3. I love that character. I love his power set. I love his look. I love his personality. And I thought the fight with Yuji versus Chozo was a huge, huge deal and a big character moment for Yuji's character.
Yeah.
I thought we got a lot of really great action, no doubt. But I thought we got some really, really interesting character work on Yuji and Chozo that is going to play a big role after this story arc is over.
Yeah, and that Yuji fight that with Choso also sets up kind of like goes into the whole like typical thing of the main character never gives up in a fight, and he always like finds that next level for him to like continue fighting, because he gets his he does get his ass kicked in this entire fight, yeah. But like you never like he always comes back and says like I'm gonna keep fighting harder and harder, but it's like what I like about this is that. Even though the character, I mean, our Yuji fights as hard as he can throughout this, at the end of the day, he just loses.
He loses to Choso.
And I'm very glad that they went that route instead of like showing like, because I was going into it, I was like, what kind of skill or ability is he going to tap into with his final energy and going to win at the end? That's kind of what I was thinking the entire time I was watching this fight. Because I was like, he's the main character. He has to defeat it. Again, I'm just going with what I normally know about these type of fights. But I'm glad that he swerved us and said, no, he's Yuji just kind of reminding us that he's a student. He's a first year student. Yes. Of course he can't take on one of the big bad guys that Satsuro was taking on earlier. There's no way. And like, as strong as Yuji has become there, he's still, again, just going back to it, he's a first year student. And this fight kind of reminds you of that he is not up to the skill level of the top skill users at all. Like he may be powerful, but he's not up there yet. And I think this kind of resets that like mindset of you, like reminding you, hey, he's still a student. He has a long way to go.
I agree. And I like that Akutami did that because it resets the reader's expectations. We realize, ooh, okay, Yuji's going to have to, he's going to have to really level up if he's going to take on the big bad of Mihito at the end of the story arc. And in fact, it also shows the reader that really Yuji transforming into Sukuna is going to have to become a necessity at some point in the story for him to progress.
Yeah.
I like that this allows Yuji's character a lot more room for growth, way more room for growth. I think sometimes in shonen manga, they push the power elevations of these main characters a little bit too fast, too early. And I liked it that Akutami is not going to do that here.
Yeah. And because again, we do see Yuji, like he busts out a lot of skills and he shows like that the normal fortitude that we see from these characters of like, hey, I know I got to keep fighting. But he does a good job of kind of almost a Rocky moment of like, he keeps fighting until he can't fight anymore. That's basically how he passes out. He like almost basically passes out in a fight instead of like him getting like demolished and like beaten down until unconsciousness. It's more that he gets he's so tired because he's busting out so many skills that he normally wouldn't, or like overexerting himself, that he just gets tired at the end. He like passes out. He's like, I can't, like he physically cannot do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So agreed. I like that. That's it's a nice change of pace. It kind of again, it still shows Yuji as like a very powerful character, like a badass character who will fight till the end. But at the same time, again, he's no match for the main bad guys. That's what we know. And like you said, we know that it's going to take a lot for him to take on, if he's going to take on Mahito, or he needs backup, or what character is going to show up to help him out.
Mm-hmm. And before we Sukuna finally arrives on the scene, what I also liked in the fights leading up to it would be Toji Fushiguro's appearance when our heroes are battling Dagon, and when Toji arrives on the scene, I was happy. I adore Toji's character. To me, he's kind of like the Jason Voorhees or Michael Myers of this manga. You know what I mean?
He doesn't have
superpowers per se he doesn't have curse, you know, powers. He doesn't use any kind of sorcery. His powers are, dude's just unstoppable. He's got super strength, super, you know, durability, super speed, super weapon abilities. He's just like he's like Jason Voorhees. He keeps coming and coming and coming. And they get it, you know, Akutami gets Dagon over as this monster heel that the combined powers of the Jujutsu Sorcerer's Kit are just, they're struggling. And these are heavy hitters that Dagon is fighting, right? These aren't some pushovers, okay? This is the head of the Zenin family, right? And and it's Nanami. So these are big heavy hitters that Dagon is pushing around. And to have Toji arrive on the scene and just crack the knuckles in and shrug off every single cursed attack and whoop butt on Dagon was just, he's such a cool character.
Yeah, and I think that that fight also kind of shows off, like, out of all the fights that we get in this entire story arc, shows off all the range of, like, different types of curse abilities and different types of fighting yes. styles.
Yes.
Like, even though, obviously, Dagon just gets put over as, like, the Roman Reigns of this.
Yeah.
But of this entire thing. But at the same time, we're able to see everybody else's skills. And, like, again, going back to just kind of what this series does a very good job of as well, of, like, showing that it's not just about, like, the cursed powers or energy levels. Like, you could have these weapon wielders, you could have these other types of characters that are not just like the one singular, like, we got to use these type of skills. It's you have a lot of different types of fighting abilities, and I think that even though Dagon obviously overpowers everybody, you get to see that throughout the fight of, like, oh yeah, there's a lot of different cool action sequences that we could do here.
Yeah, and I like that how Akatami ends up, you know, getting rid of Toji, is because Toji's taken over the body of one of the villains, the Ogami's body, when the grandmother put, you know, summoned Toji's spirit into Ogami's body. And so Toji's, when he's brought back, his whole purpose is to take out the most strong person near him. So after he dispatches a Dagon, and because the other two sorcerers are so badly injured, that leaves who? His son, Megumi, as the next most powerful character near him. So he has to now fight his son. And I like that Toji is able to overcome the curse that requires him to fight whoever is the most powerful person near him. He's able to overcome that curse and kill himself in order to save his son. Because he would have just killed his son. His son couldn't stop him. There's no way. Toji's too OP. But I like that because Toji is presented up to this moment, he's been presented as not the nicest guy. It was the first moment where I think Toji's character has been humanized, where you've seen I don't want to say softer, but a kinder side, I guess, a caring side to his personality that you've never seen before.
Yeah, and I think that that's a very good thing to establish. And also it kind of just sets up Megumi to have a bigger story arc.
Yes.
Story after this series, or after this, not series, but after this story arc, because just we've seen Megumi like have like a lot of cool fights in this, but
I feel
like this was like one of the first moments where we're really getting into his character. And so, like, just kind of setting up of like, oh, he's gonna have his own story. It's not just gonna be whatever he's along with Yuji and the others. There's a separate story beyond like the school and all this stuff that, and I think that's also just kind of important to have, like, when you have such a huge cast of, like, cause we've seen it with, like, Yuji has his own story in this with obviously with how he has his cursed powers with Sukuna, but there's also like Nobara has her own, I feel like has had her own story established early on in the series with what her motivations are. And we'll get into like kind of what her motivations are further of like what flashbacks that we get, but then also like Maki Zen and like her entire story with her family. Like, there's a lot of characters where that have their own side story out beyond the school and beyond the fighting. And I think this was an important point in this series to set up Megumi to have his own story as well.
I think this kind of elevates, this is the moment that kind of elevates Megumi up to the level of Yuji as far as importance in the story going forward after the story arc.
Yeah.
Very close.
Yeah.
And he's no longer a clear sidekick anymore. I think he kind of gets up, raised up closer to Yuji's level.
Yeah. And it's just not about him being like the rival. I think that's an important part too, that it's not about this character that is the rival character. He's not the actual rival. He's just like, he is their friends, their partners in what they're doing, but they're not like trying to outpower each other. And it's setting up more that this story is about more of that. And that this group of characters that we're getting to know is not just, we're going to see the typical rivalries that we get from most manga. And again, just going back to the uniqueness of what Jujutsu Kaisen does in terms of like shonen style action and just character development. I think that that's very, very good that they're setting up. And obviously that all of that just kind of leads into the big reveal of the, like, Sukuna coming out from Yuji and taking over Yuji's body, because again, Yuji was taken out from in that fight of Choso. I think again, just kind of setting up like Yuji needed more, and this is where you were saying earlier of like Yuji taps transforms into Sukuna, and Sukuna just comes out and just dominates. Like we had JoJo reappear and just he hands JoJo his ass, like just again reestablishes Sukuna as just like the biggest badass of this, because even though we have Mahito, JoJo, Trosso, like showing that they're incredibly powerful characters, they're no match for Sukuna. Like once Sukuna appears on the stage, you're like, oh, this has turned into the worst case scenario that could be possible especially without Satoru around.
Totally agree. It's important because Jogo is, I mean, let's be honest, he is a heavy hitter. I mean, he's gone toe to toe with a lot of characters, and he's been around for quite some time. He's no slouch. And during the battle with Sukuna, I mean, Akutami has Jogo pulling off some pretty huge attacks, like the big meteor attack. I mean, wow, he really puts Jogo over as crazy powerful. And so when he loses to Sukuna, at that point, it establishes Sukuna as just unstoppable in the reader's mind.
And I think it's important too, because like Sukuna never takes a hit. Like that's the big thing. Like he never, like even for all the powerful attacks JoJo launches, like these massive attacks, Sukuna just like, all right, cool. And do you actually have anything to fight me against? It's like almost that attitude of just like, all right, you have some stuff, but yeah, you're no match for me.
But you're no match for me.
He there's some dust on my shoulder. That's it. Like that's the most you got on me. And it's like, again, just going back to what you said, Sukuna is just, man, just changes the game as soon as he appears. Like when he takes over Yuji, it's like, again, just we're doing such a good job of separating Yuji and Sukuna out to be two different characters, even though they're sharing the same body. Like as soon as Sukuna takes over, he's a different character. He's not the same character anymore. And kind of, I like that, just going all in on like this. Sukuna is just an evil bastard. Like he does not care. And as soon as he sees that opening to take over Yuji, he's like, all right, now I get to go to work and actually continue my evil plan of like. And I think that just goes into the interesting thing of this entire series of like that the main bad guy is also our main hero, like is the one and the same. And kind of going back into like how there's this internal battle within our main character of Yuji, that he is his worst enemy, literally.
Absolutely. But, this fight with Jogo really hammers that point home with Sukuna's character. It's very effective.
Yeah, and then just like going into like Sukuna going into Maharaja, like into that fight too, of like again just further establishing, establishing that like Sukuna as just, even though we have Mahito as the main bad guy for this story arc, we have Sukuna as the main bad guy for this entire series.
Bingo! The Sukuna versus Maharaja battle is great for several reasons, because it absolutely shows that Sukuna is, I mean, I guess other than you basically get the idea that other than Satoru, no one else could stand toe-to-toe with him, right? That we kind of get that feeling. And this fight really hammers that home. But what this fight also does, Kevin, I think it also does a great job putting Megumi over with the reader as a badass. And maybe, sure, he might be outclassed power level wise when it comes to, because remember, he's also a first year student. So power wise, he's outclassed with some of these villains that they're going up against, right?
Yeah.
But it puts him over in a badass in how he uses his brain. Because Megumi's deal is he can summon Shikigami, right?
Yeah.
And the Shikigami that he's exercised, he can now control. Well, he can also summon Shikigami that he hasn't been able to exercise yet, right? And that Shikigami, the one that nobody has been able to exercise, is Maharaja. So he summons him. When you do that, it automatically binds Sukuna with Megumi. Because when an unexercised Shikigami appears, the two have to work together. That's by, you know, whatever magic code there is, right?
The rules of this world.
The rules of this world say they have to bind together in a fight. And that is brilliant move by Megumi, right? To deal with this Sukuna who he can't defeat. And then Megumi takes himself out.
Yeah.
He kills himself. So Sukuna has to battle the Shikigami Mahoraga on his own. Kevin.
Yeah.
That totally gets Megumi over as A, badass, mm-hmm. B, fearless, C, intelligent.
Yeah. And it kind of just setting up the stage for Megumi later on in this series. He just kind of, you could like, just kind of like Yuji and the others of just like, you guys are still in train, like just like you said, of like they're still students. At the end of the day, they're still students, but they are going to pull all the stops that to in order to try and defeat the big bad. Like you could see that going back to the fortitude part of it. Like this is why they're the main, like the main characters of the series. Like these guys are not going to back down from anything. And again, just establishing Megumi as not just the rival character, and he is like this incredible badass character that will stand on his own and could possibly, like, by the end of the series, be one of the characters that fights one of the, like the bad guy or for the big bad. And he's going to be incredibly important, just kind of establishing why he's an important character to this entire series.
No, and Akutami hints to the reader. He hints to the reader the importance that Megumi's going to play for, because before Megumi dies, he has Sukuna use his powers to prevent him from dying.
Yeah.
And Sukuna says, "Don't die. There's something I need you to do." Mm-hmm. So now in this battle during the story arc, this is the awesome plotting. This is the awesome long range vision that Akutami is showing us. He's hinting to the reader, Hey, once the story arc is over, we got big plans. We got big plans for Megumi's character, and it has something to do with Sukuna.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good long range vision.
Yeah. And it kind of, I think for the most part, that fight just does a good job of like establishing Sukuna and then just kind of having Sukuna peace out for the rest of the story, really. Like, I think
he's too strong. You can't have him be around for too long.
Yeah. So you can't have, like, obviously, and then that allows Yuji, obviously, Yuji to come back into the fold. And like right away, Yuji just runs into problems because, like, now Yuji has to take on Mahito. But luckily for him, he has Nobara to help him out. Like, and I like these two, like this action sequence, especially because even though it's a Yuji and Nobara teaming up, like there's a point where they don't know that they're teaming up.
Yes.
Until Nobara like actually uses her skill with her hammer and nail. And I think this is where, like, going back to, for me, my favorite character really is Nobara, like in this series, just because I always just love her, how badass she is. And just like how she's not our typical like female protagonist for a manga series where she's like, hey, I'm a badass, but I also like fashion. And I like dressing. I like dressing up. And then, but you know what? I am still going to kick your. I'm still going to kick your ass, and I'm going to put up a strong fight. Because again, it's like we don't get female like main characters like this most of the time. It's like either one or the other. It's like one extreme or the other. Like she's super nerdy. Like she's powerful, and like she trains hard, but she only focuses on training.
Or she's
the love interest
and doesn't and isn't a badass, right?
Yeah. Or just the love interest.
Of the two.
Yeah, and she's just the love interest. Like Nobara has never been portrayed that way, and I like that she's just like, hey, at the end of the day, I'm a woman, and I just like I like what I like.
Yes,
you can't tell me, and if you do, I'm gonna kick your ass.
I'm gonna look fashionable while kicking your butt.
Yeah. So, but again. that's why for me, like, she's like one of these rare female like main characters that like I really really enjoy watching. And just like her fight here, I like that she's like, she knows that she's outmatched against Mahito, but she's like, you know what, I might be outmatched, but I still have a lot of skill, and like with my hammer and nails and then just kind of, and using that to also communicate to Yuji as well, because like they don't know that they're fighting at the same time. And then Yuji sees like that Mahito, because they're like, what is it, Mahito uses like almost like they're fighting clones of each other.
Correct. Because Mahito creates a double.
Yeah.
And the double that Mahito creates only has, you know, maybe I think it's as less power. It's like 20% of 20% of Mahito's power is in the clone. And the, you know, real Mahito has 80% of the power.
Yeah.
And so that's why is smart by Akutami, that enables Nobara to fight this Clone of Mojito kind of one-on-one without devaluing Mojito's power level for the later fight. That was really good fight psychology. That was smart.
And just kind of adding to how, like, we could have this range of powers, and like Mojito has like so many different skills to use against our heroes. So, and again, like you said, it does allow Nobara to stand kind of a chance, and it's not just like Nobara getting crushed like we saw with other fights of like, and even though Nobara stands a chance, she still has to pull out, like, be very creative with what she does and how she uses her hammer and nail and like different skills that she's picked up like since being at the school. And I just like that, again, it's a showcase for Nobara and kind of just setting up also that even though she's taking on Mojito at 20%, she still recognizes she's no match for him.
I like that
her understanding that also activates the flashback that I think we've been talking about, like teasing kind of a little bit of like,
yes,
probably like the most important moment in this entire like story arc for me, is like this flashback of Nobara and getting into her backstory of like her promise with her friends and everything and like kind of her motivation for the character. And I think he picked a really good time to set up like Nobara is at the end of her rope. She knows she can't take on Mojito, and because she's at this moment, it's kind of a life or death moment. She remembers what her entire motivation and the promise she can't keep to her friends. I think, again, it's very good timing of that because she's like, it's a regret for her, and she knows that something like again, this is going to be her death. And I think like the entire way it's set up, it's very handled very well. And again, and we don't know that she dies, and I think like keeping it ambiguous of like if she dies or not, because again, the way she dies is like this brutal. Half her face gets cut off and her eyeball comes off and everything like that. It's very brutal, but I like that he doesn't say that she dies. Like that you're keeping ambiguous. Like, are you setting up for a bigger return? Because again, we do get this flashback sequence,
right?
And you don't give a main character a flashback to her origin story without bigger plans for her. And I like that kind of teasing that out, that even though there's this brutal, like almost brutal death sequence that she goes through, I don't know if it's the last we see of her.
It is, right. It's the last we see. And again, you're right. The use of the flashbacks continue to be wonderful. We've seen them utilized in the prior fights. This one is probably my favorite. I've liked all the flashback scenes in the fights leading up to this one, but this one is really effective in further fleshing out Nobara's character. I loved it. It was well-timed. Yeah. This flashback scene is delivered pretty, it's almost a whole chapter long, Kevin. Yeah. It's a long flashback scene. Akutami devotes a lot of panel time to it. And I like that this flashback scene is placed where? Right before her death.
Yeah.
Which is wonderful because it's almost like Nobara, you know, they always tell you, you know, right before someone dies, their life flashes before their eyes, right? It's like Nobara is quickly remembering her, all these past memories, and this is what's fueling her up because she knows she's about to make the ultimate sacrifice. She knows this. She's purposely sacrificing herself so Yuji can get a leg up on Mojito, and she's processing her prior thoughts, processing what has motivated her in her life. And it's that thought process, it's those motivations that then enables her to make the ultimate sacrifice to help Yuji defeat Mojito. I just thought it was really well-timed. It was very, very powerful. I loved it.
Yeah, and I enjoyed it a lot just because, again, hopefully Nobara reappears soon because her status is very much unknown and, like, and I hope that it's not the last, because again, I would honestly suck if this was it. But for me, because again, like I said, she is probably my favorite character out of this series, just because I like how just multi-layered she is, and like even this flashback just adding more layers to the character and all that stuff. So, and I think again, just going back to how the flashbacks are not just flashbacks for just let me tell the origin story. It's more of just like let me flesh out these characters that you know and love more and more. So. Just because, again, I just want to add more to it. So, again, hopefully that's what the flashback also teases us, because we see that she has her own goals of, like, what are more of her own goals and just kind of getting into that. So it makes me hope that it's not the last we see of Nobara, really.
Well, we have, Nita, who is the healer. She does tell Yuji that, what is it? She places it at a less than 10% chance of survival.
Yeah. Or something like that. Which is the normal thing of saying, yeah, it's going to take a, she's going to be out of action for a while, but
yeah,
she'll be back for a bit. So, she'll be back.
You never know. You never know what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah, that's my hope. So, but yeah. And then just from there, we just get into like the big, like again, the prelude to the end fight of with Yuji and Aoi teaming up to take on Mahito. So what do you think of this entire fight of that we have?
I loved it. I love how when one friend in Nobara gets taken down, right, another one appears to help our main character, Yuji, in the battle with Mahito. I like that. Again, this establishes a theme that is very common in shonen manga, and that is friendship, right? Heroes are always able to beat villains who are more powerful than they are because of the power of friendship. And that's always an important theme, and we see it here. Even though it is not, you know, at no point does Akutami put a spotlight on it and say, through the power of friendship. No. He doesn't need to. He shows you it rather than tells you it.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important theme to see in any shonen manga.
And how excited were you really to see Aoi back and just shirtless Aoi with like his 9-pack abs and just like it's super ridiculous. Huge. Like the beefcake, like he just total beefcake action in this. I know that's what excited you the most.
Yes, it's. I love that because we also, what we haven't mentioned is that we get two, there are two chapters that are like little
interstitials.
Interstitials, right. Where obviously, you know, our poor overworked Akutami is kind of like, oh, I got to tap out this week, right? And one of them is hilarious because it has all the characters breaking the fourth wall. It's a really funny chapter. I highly recommend reading it. It has nothing to do with anything. All they do is break the fourth wall for the entire chapter. Yeah. It's super funny. And in one of it, they're like, let's have a beach scene. They're really easy to draw. And plus, we could have Io, and you see him there in like this little itty bitty bikinis, all like this muscles the bulging out, and you know, he's sculpted like a Michelangelo painting. He's just perfect.
Yeah.
it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like how during this fight, Kevin, of course, during the fight, because he's wearing a jacket and he's got a shirt under that, right? And at some point in the fight, when he first arrives, the jacket gets torn, right? So it comes off. And then he's fighting with his shirt on against Mahito, right? And then when Yuji kind of recovers enough to, so Io and Yuji can kind of, you know, regroup and get ready to fight Mahito, what does he have to do? He rips off his shirt like he's Hulk Hogan.
It's basically
can't fight with a shirt on.
It's basically for you. It's like Maymay and Aoi are your two best characters, because you got Aoi with the like badass woman with huge weapons, and then you got Aoi with just this huge man with like 9-pack abs and everything. So
I love it. Those kind of characters always make me smile, Kevin. They always make me smile.
And again, and just going away from like just the designer aspect of it, but again, just treating Aoi also just like as this, he comes in and like he is the backup that was needed, and just kind of treating him as a special character as well, just like, because again, he's not just some side character at all, like, and we know that he matches up with Yuji very well from their past fights and all that, and just kind of, again, just his entrance in as a whole, and then this entire fight just again adds into how special of a character he is in terms of how and then just how powerful he is as well.
Yep, absolutely. He's a great character, and I'm glad he got some panel time, and I'm very excited that Akutami spent the time on his character to really make him seem important. He played up the brother relationship, right? Which, again, this is a common theme. This brotherhood, because you've got Io and Yuji being brothers, you've got Chozo and Yuji being brothers. So there's this overarching theme of these brothers out there that obviously is part of a much larger long range story that's going to happen, that's going to continue on after the story arc is over, right? But I like that we continue with that. So it's good long range plotting, as well as really good character work on Aoi to really get him again, no one is a small character. No one is unimportant. Everyone gets treated like a big deal. And it continues with this fight, which I like.
And just kind of, it sets the like stage for like the big end of this entire story of like with Pseudo Ghetto coming back and just like, just being unstoppable and just being set up as the big bad after like what we're at almost 150 chapters of this series. And now we're finally getting into like, again, Sukuna has been set up as the, as like the big main antagonist of the series. But now we have this other character in terms of Pseudo Ghetto of like, that isn't attached to Yuji or anything like that, which I think is also important to have, where you have this, maybe he will become the secondary antagonist for this, but just setting up someone that is possibly like at that Sukuna level of a bad guy. And you could see that from just this last fight that we have where the Jujutsu sorcerers have to team up with Choso to try and overcome. But again, they're in this, what, prison realm for this entire fight. And this is where the art really shines, where like, where everything is super detailed, and you could tell that Akutami, he just poured as much as possible in this entire thing because he wanted the prison realm to come off as this incredible, like creepy world, but like cool and creepy and cool world, I would say, because there's so much like, this is where the horror elements of this series comes into play a lot, where we see all the cursed spirits, where we see all the different abilities that are here, and then just like even the box that Satsuro is locked in, where you see the eyes and all that stuff in there. Because I don't remember seeing that when Satsuro got locked in, but then in these final chapters we have where like Akutami, he purposely goes into a close up of the box that Satsuro is locked into, and you could see like there's a couple different eyes in there. And it's just like, it's like little details like that. And then just the entire, like I said, the entire setting of the prison realm, where you could tell like the artwork is like, this is where I'm pouring everything I have into this story.
Absolutely. There, no doubt about it. The art really shined at this moment. There's a lot to like about this. What's great is it shows that Yuji, again, had to have help from the fellow Jujutsu sorcerers and Choso in order to, you know, go up against Pseudo Ghetto and Yurame. What's wonderful about this fight is it gets kicked off. This big final fight gets kicked off with what? With Pseudo Ghetto eating Mahito.
Mm-hmm.
He transforms Mahito into his little energy ball, right? And boop, pops him in his mouth and eats him. So here you are, you know, right before that happened, of course, You had Mahito on the run, right? He was obviously going to lose. Okay, yeah. So it's not like we've robbed our hero of the big moment of vanquishing the big bad.
Yeah,
it was obvious Mahito was going to lose the fight, right? Mm-hmm. It was obvious Yuji was going to kill him, no doubt about it. So I didn't mind that Pseudo Ghetto stepped in at that last moment. Mm-hmm. That he did, because the fight was already done. You already knew. You didn't need to see Yuji actually kill Mahito, right? You didn't need to see him. You already seen Yuji grow. So that character work had been done. That growth had been done. But boy, having Pseudo Ghetto turn the big bad, Kevin, who we have been seeing just bedevil and frustrate and slap around all of our heroes for 50 plus chapters, to see him transformed and eaten by Pseudo Ghetto makes you go, okay. Pseudo Ghetto hasn't been a physical force up until this moment, but oh crap.
Yeah.
So this guy really is on a different level. Like he really is.
Yeah.
On an entirely different level.
And that's where you get it. Like where you kind of said, like you said, it's like, it does take Yuji teaming up with all the Jujutsu sorcerers and Choso just to like even stand a chance. And they don't even stand a chance. And you have like Pseudo Ghetto. He almost like treats it as his plaything. Like at towards the end, like his entire speech and everything just points to like, you guys are all my playthings. We're now entering into the new world. Like you are entering into my world, and here, like what do they say? It's the old golden, like the new golden age, for spirits. And then he just unleashes all the spirits into the world, and that's basically the end. And just like, I like how this entire thing ends, where like, again, you have all our heroes uniting, all these powerful characters uniting against the big bad. But at the end of the day, big bad says, nope, nothing. And I'm resetting. It's almost like I'm resetting the world. It's like he's doing our own reboot of the world.
Yes.
And then it's just like, and the best thing that he does is at the end is that he just cuts to black, and then you don't know what happens.
Right.
I love that he did that. It's like, wait, what's going to happen? Like, you don't even see, like, you see the spirits unleashed, but then you don't see what happened. Like, you don't actually see the spirits going around the world. It's just cut to black. And I was like, that was such a cool, unexpected way to end this entire story arc.
Yeah. I was shocked, Kevin, no doubt about it. I was expecting this story arc to end in the traditional way that most shonen manga end this kind of story arc. I expected to see our heroes all have to come together and battle Sudo Geto and Yorame and defeat them.
Yeah.
That's what I expected. And then free our Superman character, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I expected to see, but we didn't. Sudo Geto leaves. He still has Satoru Gojo in the little prison cube, right? And on top of it, Sudo Geto unleashes all these curses and, all these cursed objects are now available for anyone to go get and use for whatever means they want to use them for.
Yeah, and I think that just plays into how, like, you could tell, like, Akutami knew that, like, I have this huge story that's going to be 50-plus chapters, and for most people, like, a 50-plus chapter story arc, that means that the heroes have to overcome everything at the end, but that's not what this story is. Like, this story is about setting the stage for my big, big plans after this, because this is a big plan, but we got even bigger plans coming up, and I think that that's cool. Like you said, playing with my expectations of, like, the hero's going to win at the end, because this is obviously a 58 chapter story arc, but I've been doing this for about a year and a half of like him doing this, if you count the interstitial chapters and everything. So so you have this super long story arc that all your fans are invested in, but nope, it's not the heroes win at the end of the day. This is about setting up the future. And I like also that you don't know if that means that we're going to get a time skip in this, or we're going to get into like what we normally get into these shonen manga, or it's just going to be the next day for the afterwards. It's just like, just expect the unexpected, because the bad guy won at the end and our heroes are all super injured or killed or like maimed or whatever, but you don't know where our heroes stand afterwards. We're just like unknown territory. And that's why I was like, I love the cut to black moment of at the end. It's like, just that just emphasizes, we do not know where the story is going to go from here.
I agree. I love that Akutami managed to take this 50 plus chapter story arc and surprised all of us in using it to set the stage for the next grand act. He honestly, what he does is he resets this entire world, Kevin. Mm-hmm. He resets the entire world. It's almost like we're starting from scratch again.
Yeah.
Which is brilliant, and for a long running manga, that's actually very necessary.
Yeah,
you do that if you plan on doing this for hundreds and hundreds of chapters, right? I mean, that's kind of the goal. And he does, none of us expected this. None of us expected this kind of ending, but it is such a more satisfying ending. I like when villains win. I have no problem with that. You know, it's kind of like real life. Yeah, bad guys win all the time. And I like that we reset this universe, because you look, we're about 136 chapters into this.
Yeah.
All right. You know what? It's about time that you shake things up, reset things a bit, if you want the title to remain fresh and interesting.
And you could almost say that this is like really the end of the first saga of this entire series. Cause like up to this point, we've been basically just in training mode for all the characters. Cause I would say almost every story arc has been like 10, 15, 20 chapters at most, like for the most part. So we've had this entire series has been built on very small, very small story arcs.
Yes.
So it almost feels like this is the end point of the first saga of this. So it's like, we got the first act out of the way. all the characters have been training, and this and the Shibuya incident, you got to see where all that training were at the end of the day, where Yuji, Noboru, and Megumi are at, like, after all the training that we've been putting them through with Satoru and at the school. So like this is the payoff for all that. Now we're going to get into the next stage of it, whether that means we are going to get a time skip a little bit, or we're just going to pick up the next day. We don't know, but we're now into that next phase of my plans. Like, we're in phase two of Jujutsu Kaisen. And again, we don't know how many phases there are going to be, but now we're beyond that training part of the story.
Absolutely agree. And what I think is interesting is that we finally figure out who Pseudo Geto is. And I think that is really important. That is a satisfying, that's what makes this ending with the villain winning so satisfying to me, at least, because this is now setting it sets the stage for a lot more interesting direction going forward. You know, now that we know who he is, we know who he's connected to, and he's been around for, what is it, 150 years? Is that right?
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, and just going also into it, of like this story arc, because of how long it was, it set up so many subplots as well. Because I think one of the cool things about this entire series has been how we've had so many small story arcs.
Right.
So like that have been focusing on different character relationships and all that. And now this at the end of the Shibuya incident, we have a lot of subplots set up so that we can have more continuation of the series exploring. Like, let's do a four or five chapter story on this character or on this character. So it kind of sets up for it to continue that way. So that way, like, we get all these small stories that build up to the next big story. So, and I think that's a good thing, that at the end of the day, like, the villain winning at the end, I think that's what it sets up for. Is like, it's not going to be just Yuji, but all the other characters are going to have their own story to tell. And we can't get, like, we before this, we got Satoru's flashback of like learning kind of his origin story. Right. And this story arc kind of sets up for almost every character that we've been introduced so far to have their own story arc, so that way leading up to the next big fight, while Yuji's gonna have to go through some training. So in the middle of that, like, just having all the other characters have their own stories will be a good thing for the series long term.
Yep, agreed. And I think, and also I like that Pseudo Geto, I mean, his real name is Noritoshi Kamo, and so he's like the most evilest jujutsu sorcerer in history. He's basically the Voldemort of this universe, right? Basically.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like that Pseudo Geto, the reveal was something that paid off so well. And what's interesting is I think that Kamo being the most evilest sorcerer ever, been around for 150 years, I think you're going to see where he has a connection through his 150 years. He has a connection with a lot of different students.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of different characters are going to be connected to him, I think. He's going to be kind of like a common theme that is going to be used by Akatami to connect various characters in this universe.
It'd
be a lot of fun as we start to unravel all those connections. That's my guess. Yeah. I don't know for sure, but I think there's a good chance that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, and that's going to be super interesting to see, because like, obviously Pseudo Geto is, like you said, it's set up like the Voldemort of the series, and but we still have Sukuna around. Like, we can't forget about that. And it's like, this does such a good job of like setting up like where Pseudo Geto is this powerful character, but then we also have Sukuna around as the main, like, who so far has been set up the main antagonist. And I'm very interested to see how Akitami plays with Sukuna moving forward, as well as like who's been built up as the main antagonist. And we saw earlier in this story arc before leading up to the final fight of like Sukuna has his own plans. How is Pseudo Geto's plans going to relate to that? Do they have this connection we don't know about?
Right.
Or are they both two different antagonists with two different plots, and are they going to end up colliding against each other? There's like a lot of
Luther
questions.
Luther and Brainiac?
Yeah, it's going to be incredibly interesting to see, just because, again, there's so much like set up with this, and it's going to be very exciting to see what plans are next. Cause I know that, like we said, Akitami is going to be taking a break for a little bit. After, like, I think we have one more chapter releasing after this.
Yep.
And then we have, I think we just passed 150 chapters in this series. Just this past week or so.
Yep.
So again, it's setting the stage for hopefully after Akitami comes back from his break, he continues telling the stories that he wants to tell. And he has because there's a lot of things that he could tell, and hopefully he's able to get back at full strength, because he has set up a lot with this Shibuya incident. Yeah.
I'm really glad we didn't mention it, but I'm really glad that Akitami keeps Satoru Gojo sealed up in the prison cube.
Oh yeah.
I actually like that, because being the Superman character, it's kind of like the problem the DC Comics has, right? In any kind of big event, any kind of big story, what's the first thing they do? They put Superman on a shelf, right?
Yeah.
Somehow. Through some mystical, you know, you always have to put Superman on a shelf so all the heroes can struggle and fight and struggle and fight. And then at the very, very end, you take Superman back off the shelf and he's a different
speaker. You bring him back from the 3D dimension that he gets put in Final Crisis.
Yes, yes, exactly. Oh. And I kind of like that, because I have a feeling that Gojo, he's too strong. He's just too strong. He needs to be away. So at the very, very end, when whatever is going down, maybe you have, I don't know, maybe you have Sukuna and you know, pseudo ghetto combine forces, whatever horrible thing appears, you need to be able to have Gojo kind of come off the bench at that point.
Yeah.
But he needs to be away, I think.
Yeah, and maybe even his time away also will just add to his importance as well, like in terms of how much of an impact he's had on all the students and everything, because he's been teaching you, especially Yuji, he's been doing a lot of close training with him. So it's going to be interesting to see that, because like even Yuji at the very end, he screams for Satoru, like his sensei, because he's like, I can't, like you could tell that we're at the end and I couldn't save my sensei after everything he's taught me. And it's like, and that was a nice thing to end Yuji's entire character on in the story, of like him yelling for his sensei's because he knows he failed him.
Yep. Agreed. So. It's been, I can't wait to see what happens when Akitami comes back from his break. I got high hopes.
Yeah, for sure. It's, again, this series is excellent. Again, for people that are just watching the anime, they have a lot to look forward to. If you continue listening to us talk about this, I really am looking forward to the anime adapting this, because the anime, I feel like their art direction for this has it does even better job than the manga, like in terms of like the art direction of like how much detail there is. So I cannot wait for the second season to come back, whenever it does come back, and just adapts this entire Shibuya incident, because there's a lot here to and it's gonna be very fun to watch. So again, that's going to really close out, I think. Outside of that, is there any final thoughts you wanted to have on this Shibuya incident arc before we close out the show?
I just say, man, if you haven't jumped aboard this title yet, you do it. I know sometimes it's daunting when you see a title that's, you know, 100 plus chapters and you haven't hopped on it yet. Do yourself a favor, hop onto it. You will not be disappointed. This title brings a lot to the table. It's not just action. You get everything. You get great characters and you get good action and you get a really fascinating and immersive world. I would highly recommend investing a little bit of time reading the back chapters. You will not be disappointed. You really won't. It's excellent.
Yeah. And I 100% agree there. And like I said at the beginning, that if you've only watched the manga, the anime adapted about up to chapter 64. So, and I think the anime did a very good job of adapting the entire series. So if you want to just jump in right after the, wherever the anime stopped, that it's still a good jumping on point. You're not going to miss a thing. And so again, it is over 100 chapters right now, but it's not a bad time to get into this if you're looking for a new series. This is very much one of the, I think, Shonen Jump's best manga right now going. So,
I totally agree. Yeah, so. Absolutely.
All right, cool, awesome. Well, again, thank you very much for joining me on this episode of Rock. So if we wanted to find you, where could we find you on social media and all the internet spaces?
Yeah, sure. check me out on Twitter at Rock. That's with 2Ks Revolution. On Instagram at Rock with 2Ks Revolution. Of course, you can check me out over at comicbookrevolution.com, and you can check out the Comic Book Revolution podcast as well.
Awesome. Yeah, and just like Rock, you could catch all like my work on comicbookrevolution.com. I do a lot of reviews and commentary on there, and then you could also find me on social media at KevinL07 on Twitter and Instagram. And you could also follow the Manga Revolution podcast on all podcast services. I mean, that includes Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Amazon, everywhere else you get podcasts. So make sure to like and subscribe or actually follow, I should say. It's not subscribe anymore. So, yeah, everyone is just follow now. So, but yeah, just follow us on anywhere you could get podcasts. So, and then we would really appreciate you guys leaving us a 5-star review if possible. And yeah, then again, thank you very much, Rock, for joining me on this episode, and look forward to the next time we could podcast together.
Awesome. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks.